Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and we're starting the show today by talking with you about advanced care planning. And we have two guests for you. One, Dr. Lee Vogel, is Executive Director of Mosaic Family Health and an Associate Professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Lee Vogel, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Great to have you with us. And Ben Adams, our other guest, is an emeritus director of the Board of Directors of the Wisconsin Chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. And Ben, thank you for joining us as well.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for having both of us.
They are both founding members of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership as well. I wanted to mention that. And as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. Tell us why and maybe how you decided to complete an advanced care directive. Or maybe you're wondering how to get started with an advanced care plan. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Ben, let's start with you. What is advanced care planning, and why is it legally necessary?
Thanks, Larry. Advanced care planning is critical for all adults in Wisconsin for the reason that under Wisconsin law, as a married person, for example, I can't make my wife's medical decisions if she became incapacitated without going through a court-related guardianship proceeding to become her guardian, unless she has completed an advance directive before something happens and named me or someone as her agent. And not only that, but we can't make decisions for our adult children if something happens to them, unless they have also completed an advance directive naming a healthcare agent for themselves.
So legally, really a necessity. Dr. Vogel, what about from a medical standpoint?
Well, as a physician, it certainly is important that I know what any patient's decision would be regarding their end-of-life care and how far to extend the kinds of aggressive resources that we can have that are not only necessary in some cases but beneficial, so that we are following somebody's plan and directive, which should be formed out of their values, their beliefs, their knowledge about their body, perhaps their religious beliefs. And if we don't know that, then we are either guessing and or relying on family that doesn't feel as empowered as if there was a clear directive. And also we run the risk of applying too much, because in our society, the default is that you preserve life. Sometimes life at any cost is unacceptable to some people, but we don't know it.
Yeah. Ben, I know Governor Evers proclaimed this week as Healthcare Decisions Week. Why is it important for us to recognize advanced care planning for a week and not a day?
Well, originally this started out, if you remember, Larry, reading about Benjamin Franklin, who famously said the only two certain things in life are death and taxes. That's the moniker that they used when they created April 16th as Healthcare Decision Day. It's designed to remember people or remind us once a year to not only file our taxes, but consider making arrangements so that we not only choose an agent and authorize them to be a decision maker, but also appoint them to have legal authority, and then file that document with our healthcare providers so that folks like Lee Vogel will know they have somebody who can speak for us.
Yeah. And Dr. Vogel, what have you noticed about the popularity of advanced care directives over time? Has it become more popular?
Yeah, I think, talking about your own death is probably never really popular unless you're in my house and we have strange conversations at holiday times when I bring it up to remind my kids exactly what I want if something happens. But I do think the taboo that has existed about not talking about preparing or doing your advanced directives is becoming less so. And so these conversations are becoming more common, but honestly not common enough. I don't think we've reached the topic of advanced care planning being so popular that we don't have to have programs like this and continuous efforts at letting people know, encouraging them, and getting the job done.
Yeah. I got to believe it's difficult. I know it's such a difficult topic. I've had to go through it myself with some family members and helping them, and it actually went pretty well. But how do you encourage patients to talk about death and serious illness? I mean, they're hard topics.
Ben, I'm going to step in here, but I hope that you'll also add some things. For one thing, we need to try to normalize it. That's partly what this advanced care partnership is in our Fox Valley region, is an effort to help normalize those conversations so that they're not so uncomfortable. But in the family physician's law office or an internist or a specialist office, it's best if we try to regularize it by, you know, when you're having an annual preventive exam. I know that my MAs take a look at the electronic medical record, and if it's indicated that somebody doesn't have advance directive, they get it out and they put it right in front of me so I can't miss it, and they tee up the conversation with that person. And I do want to add that when I appreciated that you said you had to deal with that and hinted that it wasn't all that difficult. And I find that when we open ourselves up to ask those questions of our patients, sometimes it's just refreshing that they're able to answer, I have thought about it. I think this. And it's on us as doctors and healthcare teams to continuously ask.
Yeah. Ben?
Larry, I'd like to also highlight the fact that I think on your website today or your show's page, you've got some really good resources for people in the state of Wisconsin where they can take advantage of local support from health systems and community groups. You also have a link, I think, to the State Bar's free download of the healthcare planning guide called A Gift to Your Family. That's open now, and it goes till April 25th. So I hope people will go online, take a look at those resources, and take some definitive action to move forward with this.
Yeah, absolutely. And folks can just go to WPR.org/Larry, and you go to today's date, and under the comments section, you'll find those links, which are wonderful publications. I've looked at them, and they supply a lot of great information. Maybe we could talk about the different types of advanced directives. There are some different ways to look at it, I guess.
Yeah, I'll start with this one. There are some different ones. The most useful one, I think, is called a power of attorney for healthcare, which is a legal document where I can name an agent and an alternate agent or another alternate agent to step in for me if I become incapacitated. For people who have someone that they can appoint as their future decision maker when that time comes, that's the best alternative. For people who don't have that, there's an advanced directive called a declaration to physicians, which basically is a very narrowly focused legal document where I can basically tell the medical providers if I'm in these kinds of circumstances, I do or I don't want certain types of interventions to be used. So that's quite narrowly focused. Other things people can do is simply write down what their wishes are and in a way that they've got them clarified and provide those to friends and family members. That way, even if they have to go through a court-provided guardianship, once the guardian is finally appointed after great delay and expense and difficulty, the guardian at least has guidance for what types of decisions could be made.
Yeah. And everybody, basically, we should all have an advanced directive regardless of our age, correct?
That's right. I as an elder law attorney, I also did planning for many clients who were in their 20s with their first three-month-old child, and it was critical for those clients to understand that they also needed advance directives in case something happened to one of them.
And I'd like to add that sometimes we think about advance directives in the context of either ourselves or a loved one being elderly and or sicker and having chronic conditions or that can suddenly change or can slowly get worse and affect your longevity and your ability to live. But some of the most critical decisions that have ever been made by our courts and Supreme Court that have defined our right to complete these kinds of directives have been in the setting of young people suddenly in situations where they're unconscious in a coma, prolonged period of time, you know, with feeding tubes because people didn't know what they wanted because they didn't have an advance directive. So yeah. at any age.
And I think parents, you know, I've got a daughter who's 21 years old and she's, you know, and finishing up her bachelor's degree this year. But I could not make health care decisions for her, could I?
That's right, Larry. And not only that, if she were in the hospital because something happened to her and you call that hospital to find out if she's there, they can't even tell you she's there unless you have a health care directive that she has signed authorizing you. And that's something that most parents don't understand clearly enough.
And I think the other assumption you mentioned in passing, Ben, I believe that you can't just make health decisions for your spouse.
That's correct. Not in Wisconsin. And again, this isn't just about withholding medical care and end of life choices. This is about having an agent who can advocate for what your values are, what your preferences are, authorize things that you do want, in addition to at appropriate times, maybe making end-of-life decisions.
Talking today with a couple of guests, Dr. Lee Vogel, Executive Director of Mosaic Family Health, Ben Adams, Emeritus Director of the Board of Directors of the Wisconsin Chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys, both founding members of the Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. Great to have them with us. And you can join in as well. I see we have a nice email. We'll get to that. You can email us, too. The number's talk@WPR.org. Or you can phone us with your own experiences or questions. The number 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have Dr. Lee Vogel and Attorney Ben Adams with us today on the show as we talk advanced care planning. And again, you can join in. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. Wayne in Oshkosh emailed us. Wayne says, Lee and Ben, it's great to hear that the two of you are still promoting advanced care planning. His wife passed away last month while she was obviously fading and not going to recover. The hospital physician came to me and proposed tube feeding, which he stated which almost certainly would become long-term. He and his wife both had well-developed advanced care plans, and his wife's choices were clear. No long-term food feeding through a tube. Given all the other decisions associated with his wife's death, her end-of-life decision making made it easy for him. So he says, congratulations on the continued success of Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. Good to hear. Thank you, Wayne, for calling. And maybe we should take a minute to talk about Fox Valley Advanced Care Planning Partnership. How do you approach this? And maybe I could start with Ben and then go to Lee, Dr. Lee.
Sure. This is actually our 25th year, Larry, of working on the issues of advanced care planning in the Fox Valley, which we're happy to be able to comment about. We have involvement from a lot of community volunteers from local health systems over these years, I think this week. We have probably 15 or 18 community events in churches, in health systems, in senior centers, at people's family holiday dinners, like Lee was talking about, where folks are talking about the need to get this thing, get it done, get it written up and signed legally so that these decisions can be made.
Dr. Lee, go ahead.
Yeah, do you mind if I'm still thinking about Wayne, and I'm grateful that you and your wife had these documents and that they guided decisions for her in such a capable way. I'm honestly surprised about the tube feeding because that used to be something that was routinely relied upon back in the 80s and has fallen out of favor because it's not particularly helpful to people in terms of even prolonging their life, but certainly their comfort. So I'm glad it ended as it did. But it's these kinds of conversations that are encouraged by this longstanding coalition that we have here. And we have managed to ensure that we've got long-term care community interested, our hospitals interested in supporting our work, and we support the work of all of the various places that somebody might encounter the need to make an advance directive.
Yeah. Joni in Green Bay has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Joni.
Hi. I just want to point out that for same-sex couples, it's really extremely important for them to do their advance directives. It cannot be assumed that if a partner or a spouse in a same-sex couple is ill or in the hospital dying even, that they would be allowed to visit, much less make decisions or even have information. So very important that same-sex couples are encouraged and urged to complete their advance directives.
Joni, thank you for calling. Comment, Dr. Lee?
Oh, that's a, you know, it is a great point. Actually, any couple, and as we started the program with Ben letting everybody know that we're not a state where married couples or family members can even make the decision, but it can become even more difficult if you are a couple and you're same sex or even, you know, opposite sex couples. If there isn't a marital tie or a family tie, people are less likely to listen to your voice as you speak for the person you love.
Yeah. Joni, thank you very much for calling. And again, you can join in 800-642-1234 or email to talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Let's talk about choosing your health care power of attorney. What kind of person is typically the best fit for that?
Larry, this is Ben. Let me jump in quick. I'd like to also thank Joni for her call and pointing out that that issue, which is very important. Something else people might not understand is that if you're married and you and your spouse have done advance directive documents, but then you get divorced or your marriage is annulled, that document is canceled. And it's canceled completely by the divorce. It's not just the appointment of your spouse who's canceled. So anybody who did this while they were married and since got divorced, they need to redo this, even if they want their former spouse to continue to be their agent, which some of my clients did want that at some point. And I think the type of agent, to answer that question, that people are looking for is somebody who is going to listen to what the medical providers are wanting to recommend, but who's going to have had conversations over time with you and is going to be an advocate for your position, for what you would say yes to and what you would say no to, and is not simply going to decide things for themselves or agree with everything the doctor wants to do. Sorry about that, Lee.
No, that's okay. I'm fine with that. We need a little humility, we doctors. I think that the other thing I would add is that it's really important, like Ben said, to have the conversations with that decision maker that you chose so that they do understand. But also, to ask that decision maker, well, you know, we've got a lot of discord in our family. Everybody's got an opinion. And how do you feel about standing up to, you know, your brother, your sister, or whoever, to really speak for me, to say that you know what I want. And when it going gets tough and you're worried about letting me go, but you know that's my decision, or you may have a completely different opinion about continuing, but I want something. I've advised you of that. You've got to be able to have somebody who will feel comfortable in doing that, honoring your wishes, trying to decide and be helpful when your wishes aren't clearly known, but they have to make a decision for you, and communicating with the rest of the family members who might weigh in a way that empowers what you've decided.
Yeah. But that communication, I think, is really important. But it's still, you still need to have the written document, do you not?
That's crucial. That's crucial too. Absolutely.
So speaking about that, it doesn't do you any good to do your document and throw it in a drawer at home. It really has to be delivered to your family physician or your specialist office or the hospital so that they can review it and then scan it in to your electronic medical record. So it's accessible at the time that you would need it.
Someone's wondering, how long does it take to fill out an advance directive?
It can depend on the directive document you're using and your level of understanding and whether or not you need to go to other resources like your family physician or a specialist to get opinions about certain treatments. So I've done them in 20 minutes with clients. And Larry, the document on your website, which is called Wisconsin Advanced Care Planning Community Collaborative advanced directive information, that has links in it direct to the advanced care planning resources at organizations and healthcare systems throughout the state. And people can get not only the document, but assistance, free assistance in most cases, to complete these documents in the appropriate way. I've also had clients take an hour and a half or 2 hours or longer to really work through this and get these things in the right shape for them to sign them.
So why would it take 2 hours? I mean, what would be an example of a reason?
A lot of times people get to a section of the document and they're not sure what their answer should be. They're not quite sure where their values or where the medical language in the document is coming from. So they need to perhaps do a little investigation and then come back to the topic. We had a program on Sunday at our church to talk about this with church members. And one of the people who came in had a folder, and she had 7 blank advanced care directives in her folder that she'd been given 7 different times by her family physician as she went in for appointments over many years. And she never had even filled it out. So, but I'm happy to say she was able to finally complete it and get it witnessed on Sunday.
Joan called, couldn't stay with us. Her grandson is autistic and nonverbal. His mother has all the caretaking responsibilities covered for him, but what happens to him and his caretaking decisions if his mother's in the hospital and unable to make his health care decisions?
Right. That's a really difficult situation. If there's another parent, then the other parent would have, assuming this child is under 18, if the child is an adult and the child has the capability to the legal capacity to sign his own directive, appointing his mother and then appointing an alternate agent, that would be the best way to handle it. If the child involved is not capable of doing that, then the parent or parents are probably already the legal guardians through the courts for that person. And in that case, possibly a successor guardianship would need to be set up through the courts and for somebody to step in. This is not something that you can simply delegate for another person. I can pick my own agent and my own alternate agents, but my agent cannot step aside and pick another new agent for me unless I've put it in my document myself. So it's a very complicated situation that, mm-hmm. that she's outlining there.
Yeah. And I had another question. Oh, some of the questions, and here's an email. So what are some of the questions on the form?
The questions on the form have to do with, first, who is your agent and who are the alternate agents and what is their contact information? And then one of the questions that people sometimes get stumped by is, if I need to be in a long-term care facility like a nursing home for extended care, do I authorize my agent to admit me or do I say no to that because I may not really want to go to a nursing home for extended care. And if I say no, then I'm still going to have to go. It's just that I have to go through the court system after having a guardianship, which is a lot of difficulty and a lot of expense.
Yeah, a lot of difficulty and a lot of expense. And I would also just throw in a will is extremely important as well.
That's part of complete, overall estate planning, a will and a financial power of attorney. Larry, staying on the medical side, I want to point out another thing. One of the questions in most advanced directive is if a woman is pregnant at the time that the directive has to be put in place, does she want her agent to be able to make decisions for her? And the trouble with these documents is they're all written in language, and the language isn't always as clear as it should be. And it's if somebody could become pregnant, they're very wise to do a directive and say that I do want my agent to be able to make medical decisions for me, even if I'm pregnant, because if they don't say yes, the document is canceled by the pregnancy. And even though they may have done a directive, the fact that they didn't say they want their agent to make medical decisions during pregnancy will effectively negate the document entirely. So it's not just pregnancy decisions, it's all medical decisions that will not be able to be made by that appointed agent.
Hmm. Listener emailed us their sweetheart, age 82, and this listener is 75, travel often, both domestic and international. They aren't married, nor do they live together. What would you recommend that they do in preparation for these trips and the potential for needing to be the decision maker for each other when they're not in their hometown?
Well, I'm going to step in because as a physician, it's very difficult if you're caring for somebody, particularly if it's in the emergency room, it's an acute hospital situation, it's in a clinic, and you realize that somebody needs to have decisions made because something has happened and they can't contribute to the decision-making. And if they're traveling from somewhere else, you're stuck trying to find out if there's an electronic medical record that's accessible from a distance. And that's more complicated when you're out of state and when you're out of country. First and foremost, complete the documents, have the conversation between each other and then the agents, if that is the other person, certainly. But anybody who's listed as an agent, first or second. And then I recommend that you make copies of that and you carry it with you. It's probably a good idea to have it in your suitcase as well as in your travel bag. If you're in a car, that you have it in a glove compartment. None of us are doing it quite to that degree or as thoughtfully as we might each and every time, but I don't think you can be too compulsive if you're, really traveling a lot or world traveler, and you're also certainly have any medical illnesses.
Yeah, and if in that case, if the two people may have somebody else listed as the first person, but they might have themselves listed as the second person.
Yeah, Larry, that's for older unmarried, for any unmarried couple, they have to decide, or a second marriage, you have to decide, who do I want to appoint as my primary agent? Is it my best friend, my partner, so to speak, or is it my adult child? You know, that's the challenge. And each person, we all each have to make our own choices there. And I echo Lee's advice about getting copies of these things where they need to be. The other way is I have a copy on my cell phone, and I also have on my cell phone access to the MyChart electronic medical record, so that a lot of medical systems around the country could access, with my permission, could access my records. So that's another way to keep those documents and that information accessible as you travel.
And just one more on the travel part of it. If in this situation that we had a couple not married and may have different first or primary, if they're in another country, even though that person was second on the list, would that person in that situation be allowed to serve in that capacity?
I guess let me answer that in two ways. It sounded like, as you read the question, that the person who was asking the question was saying they were going to name each other as the primary decision makers. And if they did that, then the primary decision maker is going to be along on the trip. But the other part of your question is, if the medical system provider, if Lee Vogel can't reach to communicate with the primary decision maker, she has every right to go to the next decision maker and try to get the answer there.
That makes sense. UW Extension offers a program relevant to this conversation. It's called Planning Ahead. It's a 7-session research-based program that will help participants understand how to prepare for the end of life for themselves or a loved one, and understand the importance of having a plan in place. Planning Ahead, it's called. Ahead.
That's a great program, Larry. We've our extension up here in this part of the state has offered that numerous times over many years. I've been a resource person on the legal questions and the advanced directive questions, as have some of my colleagues from the law firm. It's a super program, and I encourage people to look into it.
Yeah, I want to add that, you know, we've hosted those at Mosaic Family Health as well. And my observation from having some of my own patients participate is that it really is an excellent opportunity that's enhanced if you take somebody with you. So if you are a couple or two sisters or, you know, a daughter and son along with a parent, that just people are doing this together, and it causes you to think about things, to act on them, to get both your financial and your healthcare documents done, completed, thought about, reach out and do whatever you need to do legally. But it also just spurs all sorts of conversations that ripple out beyond those people.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. Someone else wondered about revoking the power of attorney. How and when could that happen?
You can revoke it in a number of ways, Larry. One is by doing a new one. If I sign one, a new one today, the one I signed yesterday is invalid, as long as the new one is valid. You can revoke it by verbally saying, I no longer want this to be in effect. You can revoke it in writing. If somebody does decide to revoke their power of attorney, I always recommend it to those clients that they notify everybody who either had a copy of the old document or was one of the old agents, to let them know that they're no longer in authority. Because I had seen real problems arise when, you know, there were more than one person who thought they were the current agent and wanted to come in and make decisions and didn't realize they were either that they had been fired, so to speak, by the revocation of the document.
Oh, my gosh. When do these advanced directives go into effect?
Yeah, that's a really good point, too. Lee, do you want to do that?
Yeah, it really, I think sometimes people fear that once they've made it and they've named a decision maker or two decision makers, that somehow they've given away their right to speak for themselves. And really, it requires the assessment of two physicians, or a physician and a psychologist, or a physician and an advanced practitioner, such as a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant, to evaluate one's cognitive ability to make decisions and determine that you lack decision-making capacity. And what that really means is, in order to have decision-making capacity, you have to be able to hear the information or read information if you couldn't hear, but it was presented to you in some fashion. And then you have to be able to think about, you know, the various options facing you and in a health decision, and to weigh the pluses and the minuses, and to weigh them against your own value system and experiences, and then be able to communicate a decision back. And so we take the time to thoughtfully evaluate somebody's ability to make decisions before we would fill out a form that has a declaration of incapacity. And oftentimes, mostly we're dealing with persons who have developed a dementia or some other condition that's affecting their ability to think.
Yeah. Well, you guys are doing wonderful work here, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. And a reminder, if you want the links, as you listen, you want the links to the Wisconsin Bar Association's A Gift to Your Family, Healthcare Decision Planning Guide, and the updated 2025 Advanced Care Planning Contacts Wisconsin document. This resource provides health system and local ACP contacts throughout Wisconsin. You can go to our page today, the Larry Mueller Show. So WPR.org/Larry. And go to today's date, and you'll find those available to you to copy and or click on and take a look at. And if you want to, then you can make a copy of them right off your own printer at home. Lee, Ben, thank you both so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. And I hope we have a chance to do this again down the road.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
Yeah, so grateful you invite us. Thank you.
Dr. Lee Vogel, Executive Director of Mosaic Family Health. One of our guests, the other, Ben Adams, attorney and Emeritus Director of the Board of Directors of the Wisconsin Chapter of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. Coming up, we're going to turn our attention to debt collections, lawsuits, and bankruptcy. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.